Becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you to earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than standard savings accounts with competitive rates.
Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you can start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Navy Federal also offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses.
To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, their members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender, membership required. Terms and conditions apply, loan subject to approval.
Let's be honest. The first place our family turns to when we're looking for a quick getaway is always Airbnb. I know we can find an amazing place to stay at the beach, like St. Simon's on the Georgia coast, for instance. It's one of our favorite spots. That's what comes to mind, Matt, when I'm thinking about travel. And while you're staying at someone else's home, have you ever thought about what you could be doing with your own home?
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you are away, because that is all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room if you've got one. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking about forced fiduciaries, bad budgeting, and the one more year syndrome.
You know it, buddy. This is our Friday flight, and we're going to cover the top stories from this past week and how it pertains to your personal finances. And I was going to mention real quick, you and I, we always like to take walks around the neighborhood after we... I feel like we're turning into old men, but we pay more attention to our health. We like to go for a walk after we eat our lunch. It's a part of our lunch break.
And that's a mental health break just as much as it is a physical
one.
It's
the fresh air. It's the sunshine. It's keeping your blood sugar from completely spiking, the ability to move around, take some steps. But have you noticed there's been a lot of construction on our, like, just around the corner?
So much.
Did you notice the ADU over there that literally...
Which one, Matt?
Oh, good question. I'm talking about the one that went up, like, virtually overnight.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, like, the Sears Roebuck house kits, and we were talking about that again recently too. But
you used to be able to buy super cool bungalows literally out of the catalog for thousands of dollars back
in
the
day. Literally, it's what it looked like happened over there, because I swear there was nothing there, and then all of a sudden like there were guys bringing in pre-constructed roof beams, and like all of a sudden there is like a carriage house or ADU back
which
there.
I think
it's amazing.
Some of the prefab action kind of helps cut down on hopefully some of the cost, and also makes it a little bit quicker to build. And ADUs are just kind of boomtown right now in the places where they've been legalized and where the rules to create those ADUs have been diminished. When it's just easier to get it approved, then you start building. And the cool thing about ADUs is they're allowing a lot of people to dip their toes into the real estate investing market without feeling like you got to save up a ridiculous amount of money and go out there and buy a duplex or triplex or something like that, right? So, and it just makes it easier to manage. It's in your backyard. You can choose whether you want to do short-term or long-term. ADUs are just such a great way to add more housing supply. We're seeing it in California. Like, a huge percentage of the units that are being built are ADUs in people's backyards. They're creating more supply. They're really helping with that problem that we face.
And why? Because of less red tape.
Right.
As opposed to other forms of housing construction that they're attempting.
That's right.
Yeah.
So there was in Chad Carson's email. Chad Carson, we love him. One of our favorite real estate investors.
Coach Carson.
Cool
dude. You have to refer to him as Coach Carson. I can call him Chad, but he forces you to say
he calls. He makes me call him Mr. Coach, actually. So one of the things he mentioned, and I didn't realize this existed until his newsletter this week, he said he referred to a guy called That ADU Guy. Maybe we should have That ADU Guy on the show at some point.
Ooh.
This is his not his Christian birth name, but he offers free ADU templates on his website. So if you're kind of thinking about getting in the ADU game, and it can be expensive to get the plans drawn up.
Like the floor plans,
yeah.
Construction documents
so
needed.
If you are right like, on. Go over there and look, and you're like, I like the look of that. Well, that's one expense reduced at least, which I think is so cool that guy makes it available for free.
Yeah, well, and we'd mentioned ATL ADU, and one of the benefits that they had was that as well, the fact that they had the plans included into the cost of them actually building it, though. And
yes.
So in that case,
you don't get it for free.
You kind of had to go with the whole package. But in this case, yeah, you can get the plans, and if you can arrange something with another local contractor, well, that's one less step, one less hurdle before you have the ability to... Not even, possibly rent out the space. But I'm even thinking of folks who are building a carriage house for like their in-laws or
yeah,
their parents or something
exactly.
like that. Would you ever consider something like that
for
in,
sure.
in your backyard?
Most definitely. And the great thing is it's easier to get quotes too, right? When you have the plans, you can send them out to a few builders instead of going through that process, paying the money.
Officially get it bid out, man.
It slows things down. And so if you're like, listen, I'm ready to pounce. I don't know. I just love that ADU guys doing that. And so maybe one of these days we'll talk to them on the show. But yeah, definitely go check that out. We'll put a link to those free templates in the show notes up on our website. howtomoney.com, of course. But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the Friday Flight. It's a quick sampling of stories we found interesting this week. Let's start off by talking about non-competes. You and I disagree on this a little bit. We did last time we talked. I don't know if we're on the same page now. We'll find out, I guess. But the question is, are
no comment.
Mom and Dad are fighting again. Are non-competes going away? It looks like they might be. 1 in 5 Americans are currently affected by a non-compete. Many who don't have access to IP or trade secrets that are, highly specific that they can't take, that the employer is trying to prevent them from taking elsewhere, which was really the impetus for non-competes in the beginning. It was to protect proprietary information and to prevent someone from going down the road and giving that to their new employer, harming that business in the process, right? I mostly like this FTC attempted ban on non-competes because they harm so many workers. They hold down wages, limiting personal economic freedom. But I will also say, Matt, and we had this discussion about the blanket ban versus kind of what's happening. Different states have different rules around non-competes right now. And the blanket ban that the FTC is attempting, it doesn't allow for some of the nuance in at least a few of the professions where non-competes do make at least some sense. And so, yeah, it's true that the FTC's authority to do this is questionable. Also, kind of like the president's attempt at forgiving student loans, that is going to be part of the discussion moving forward, and part of we'll see how this plays out on from the legal aspect, from the legal side of things. But for now, non-competes are massively overused. They particularly harm low-wage workers, and we would just say to you, whether or not this goes through all the way, be careful signing a non-compete because it can cause real harm to your career and to your personal finances.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So another government action that's going to impact your personal finances.
Oh, we're not going to argue on this one for a while.
No, I said no comment.
Okay. So,
I mean, I still disagree. I still think it should be something that is negotiated, that's on the bargaining table between employers and employees.
Even sandwich makers and...
But that's the thing. I do see a potential discussion around, I don't know if I see a need yet for it, but for individuals who may not be informed, like, I guess bottom line, there's like a collective action problem. And so you might have a single person who's saying, well, yeah, that's not something I'm going to be a part of. But collectively, I see where that could provide some help. But so we're going to continue a government theme because financial advisors, they're going to be held to a fiduciary standard starting in late September of this year. Many advisors do this of their own accord already, but certainly not all of them. And finding an advisor, it can still feel like swimming through like shark infested waters. And if you take the wrong route, if you are swimming in the wrong ocean, you get your leg bitten off.
You got an open wound.
And that's basically because of all of the fees that you're going to incur. And the fiduciary standard, it's one that puts advisors on the same footing basically as doctors, right? Where the first rule is essentially to do no harm. And up until now, advisors, they've been able to put their own interests above yours as the client, where they have the ability to sell you products, and maybe they might be able to invest your dollars in ways that aren't necessarily best for you. And that's not going to be the case anymore.
Yeah. But instead of saying, oh yeah, you should totally be in VU like Matt and Joel talk about, because the low cost and the high diversification that you're going to have, it's like, well, why don't you go in actually some of these other funds, because they're going to cost a lot more money and that pads my bottom line. And that it's a problem, because we're talking about the advisor wants one thing, you want another thing, and if they're not held to a standard that requires them to do what's in your best interest, at least some of them, a decent majority of them, in fact, are doing the opposite. They're doing what's in their best interest, not yours. And this rule, Matt, what I found interesting, it applies to insurance agents too, which has long been a segment of advice and sales where I'm going to say murky advice was par for the course. Think about high cost annuities, right? This rule is, I think, maybe single-handedly going to wipe out at least the worst kinds of annuities that people are often sold. They're approached by insurance salespeople with. It also applies to anyone giving one-time advice, right? Such as rolling over your 401k to an IRA. And this shift has been tried before. The can was kicked down the road. It blew up under the last administration. Not everyone needs an advisor, of course. I think it bears mentioning, especially folks in the wealth building phase of their lives who need to focus on socking away as much money as possible. Maybe those thousands of dollars a year you could or might spend on that advisor would be better off going into your own retirement accounts instead. But this is good news for if or when you do decide to hire someone. It doesn't negate your own need for financial education, but working with an advisor who is a fiduciary, who is obligated to put your interests first, is crucial. And making that the standard, I think, is the right thing to do.
Yeah, I love fiduciaries, right? And we talk about fiduciaries all the time here on the show. But I just don't like the fact that it's being forced. I still think that folks should have the option to go
choose crappy ones.
Yeah, literally. I mean, it's not that it's crappy. What do we quantify or qualify as crappy? Something that's more expensive. But just because something is more expensive and it's not the leanest, most efficient vehicle, doesn't mean that it can't be in the benefit of somebody who's paying for it and in the benefit, obviously, of somebody who's selling it. I think optionality is good. It makes me think of one of my college roommates has a more traditional financial advisor. And he does things like go and play golf at exclusive golf courses with this guy. And so there's more of a relationship there. Like, there are these additional perks that are tough to put your finger on.
You still have a relationship with a fee-only fiduciary.
Well, he has that because he pays more to that guy. And so,
so the extra thousands of dollars he's paying, it pays off in an extra hundreds of dollars in golf course outings.
Yes. I mean, and it doesn't make
sense. Sounds like a bad deal.
Doesn't make sense to me. I wouldn't do that. I'm not spending my dollars that way. If I wanted to pay for a financial advisor, would go see a fiduciary. But, just because I wouldn't want to do that doesn't mean that I think other folks shouldn't have that option.
The problem is most people don't know that their advisor isn't, they think that their advisor is supposed to do what's best for them.
I feel like a lot of folks who have the money to pay for an advisor, they're kind of like, well, I know, but all my buddies from my fraternity back in school from 20, they use this guy, he takes care of us.
Exactly. That's the kind of thing. He takes care of us, but they don't realize the hidden fees that they're paying and how much it might be costing them, and maybe that there's a better route out there.
Yeah, possibly. But it makes me think of even airlines. It makes me think of flying first class or business class.
Which we're going to talk about here in just a second.
But I don't fly first class. I don't pay for softer seats or whatever they get up there. It's not the most affordable way to fly, but I like that that's an option for some folks,
but that's
if they want to pay that.
That's because we know how much it costs. And I think the problem with non-fiduciary advisors is most people don't realize. If you were to ask 100 people out on the street, what does fiduciary mean? I guarantee you maybe three could tell you. And then they would say, if you were to ask 100 people who have an advisor, how many is your advisor, financial advisor, or fiduciary?
I bet it's a lot more than three.
I bet
for folks who are actually paying.
Yeah, maybe 15 out of the 100 could tell you whether or not they are. And that's just a problem. It's the opaqueness, and I think that's part of the issue. It's not as straightforward as maybe you're thinking it is. I think there are a lot of people who are kind of duped by the products and the thing. They think that their advisor is doing what's best for them, even when they're actually not.
All right. So you mentioned a second ago that there is still a need for us to take responsibility. There's still a need for financial education. Erin Lowry, she wrote about retirement anxiety over at Bloomberg this week. She touched on something that we have before as well, which is a reliance on social media for investing advice. And depending on who you follow, that could be awful. But she actually broadens that out. She broadens her disdain to YouTube and to podcasts.
How dare she?
Which we see as specializing in more long-form content that allows for a more thorough discussion, allows for some of that necessary nuance.
Yeah, YouTube and podcasts are not the equivalent of TikTok and Instagram Reels, right? I mean, they're completely different things. There's a different amount of time, different ability to relay and then absorb information.
Totally, yeah. And so we're just pointing out that she specifically says that designing a retirement strategy based on free advice is a dangerous plan. But we think that you can get a killer free personal finance education. I think the best of some of the different podcasts and YouTube creators out there, some of the different publishers, like those more consumptive, more maybe entertaining forms of media, plus free books from the library is likely enough for a lot of folks to put together a solid investing plan. So there are options out there, and we just don't want a few bad apples to necessarily ruin the entire bunch of all the folks out there. Like, I mean, who we, you know, obviously we consider ourselves in that category of providing solid financial advice.
Yeah. And when you lump in all of these different platforms together and you make them sound like they're the exact same, I think you do a disservice to the great creators on some of those platforms. Are there bad, crummy people giving really awful advice on YouTube? Of course. But like, think about the amount of minutes of viewing potential there exists on YouTube. It's astronomical. So, of course, there are going to be bad people. But then it makes me think of Marco from Whiteboard Finance, who we had on recently. His YouTube channel has been around for many, many years now, and he's been doing great work. And we mostly talked about Bitcoin with him. But go back and look at like the number of money topics he's covered. It's wide range. Or Jaspreet Singh from Minority Mindset. We've featured so many creators in these more long-form spaces on this podcast.
Yeah, I love folks on YouTube
who are doing awesome stuff. So to lump all those in together seems really silly. And yes, you can do great with free advice if you're picking the right people to listen to. All right, let's do one more government-related story for today, Matt. Because this
That's
is
the theme for this episode, big government.
Yeah, but there's so much that impacts your money with what's happening with some of these government rulings, and a lot came down really just in the past week. So if you've got the travel bug after listening to Wednesday's episode, which how could you not after that, the DOT, the Department of Transportation, is implementing new rules for airlines that are going to look a little bit more like what's going on over in Europe. Europe has long had traveler-friendly rules that the airlines have had to abide by. Like, for instance, if your flight is delayed over a certain amount of hours, I want to say it's 4, you get a full refund. And I've known a lot of U.S. Friends and family who have been able to snag those significant dollars back in their lives because of this European rule protecting passengers. So what are the changes here in the United States? Well, the word delay has been redefined. It used to be this unspecified, vague definition. And so if it's delayed, then you owe passengers something. Well, delay is now defined as 3 hours for a domestic trip and 6 hours for an international one. And when you encounter a delay now, or a changed flight or delayed baggage, you don't have to fight for compensation. You'll get an automatic refund within 20 days. And there are also more requirements for transparency of fees before you book your flight, which transparency is great. And then not to have to, you know, claw back and call the customer no service from the airlines in order to get the refund you deserve. It's, I don't know, sounds helpful. Sounds nice for flyers everywhere.
Totally, yeah. And here's the thing. We don't want the airlines to do away with the fees, sort of like we were talking about earlier about the fiduciaries. It's okay that they are there, but let's make sure that they are a bit more transparent, that they're a bit more clear.
You and I, we're about to fly on Frontier, and we picked them because the cost of the ticket was lower. But I was literally checking in for the flight this morning, and I looked at all the fees they charge for all sorts of silly things and how expensive it is. And one,
you're talking about all the optional stuff?
Yeah. All the optional stuff. So like, most people...
Are you sure you don't want to bring a carry-on bag?
Right, for $69.
No. No, sir. I will maintain that personal item.
That's right.
That I have shoved all of my clothes into.
That's right. But we knew that, eyes wide open, into it. We're like, we could book the $750 Delta flight, or we can book the $400 Frontier flight and then jump through the hoops. And you know what? Still pay $400.
Which is why, again, kind of going back to the... I love the optionality that all of these different providers, or in this case, different airlines that they're able to offer folks, because you can score the best overall deal by being price sensitive, jumping through some of the different hoops that they require of you. But I think some of the sneaky fees are also the problem as well. And just kind of the way they are... The way the terms are laid out and the language, I guess, that they use. And so I think making the airlines list them out front and center in an age where you could be charged for just a slew of random things, that's certainly more consumer friendly. And I'm very happy to see that they have clearly defined what a delay is as well, because that's one of the... And the fact, too, that the refunds are they're going to be cash refunds as well, as opposed to credits that go towards maybe an airline that you rarely fly with that ultimately never get taken advantage
of.
That you get to benefit from.
Expire within a year or something like that. And you're like, well, crap, I'm not planning on going on another trip in the next year, because not everybody travels on an airplane every single year. So, no, I agree with that. And I think transparency is key here. It's not requiring them not to charge certain fees. It's saying, listen, you have to be transparent about this. And maybe going back to the fiduciary discussion, maybe that was the right thing to do, to say, hey, actually, you don't have to do this, but you've got to disclose this, this, and this on the front end. Because that's the problem, is most people don't realize. And I think if you had to tell people that, they might run away screaming before they engage in a relationship with you.
Sure.
But, all right, we've got more to get to on this episode, including a budgeting method that scares the pants off me. We'll get to that and more right after this. Kachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics, and in other words, everything your body craves to feel your best. This is where Kachava really earns their 52,000-plus five-star reviews. It tastes amazing. It's creamy and smooth with just water, and it comes in five delicious flavors. You can choose from chocolate, vanilla, chai, matcha, and coconut acai. Kachava is offering How to Money listeners 10% off for a limited time. I've been using Kachava in breakfast smoothies in the morning recently. It's just so nice to pack in a bunch of nutrients early in the AM in a way that's satisfying and energizing. So if you want to optimize your breakfast, your workout shake, be sure to check out Kachava. Just go to kachava.com/howtomoney. That's spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's kachava.com/howtomoney.
You probably think it's too soon to join AARP, right? Well, let's take a minute to talk about it. Where do you see yourself in 15 years? More specifically, your career, your health, your social life? What are you doing now to help you to get there? Well, there are tons of ways for you to start preparing today for your future with AARP.
What about that dream job you've dreamt about? Sign up for AARP reskilling courses to help make it a reality. How about that active lifestyle you've only spoken about from the couch? AARP has health tips and wellness tools to keep you moving for years to come. But none of these experiences are without making friends along the way. Connect with your community through AARP volunteer events.
So, it's safe to say, it's never too soon to join AARP. They're here to help your money, your health, and happiness live as long as you do. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/wisefriend. Joel, so we were just recounting our trip to Scotland. This is the trip that we took this time last year, actually, with some of our friends over the weekend. And one of the highlights from Edinburgh was stumbling upon the absolute best meat pie shop.
Mm-hmm.
They were fresh out of the oven. They had that perfectly flaky crust. But guess what? That serendipitous experience would never have happened if we'd stayed at a boring hotel. We had found the perfect flat in the coolest part of town, thanks to Airbnb.
Ah, Matt, I'm still dreaming about those meat pies. You're making me drool. And while turning to Airbnb might be a no-brainer when you're looking to spend some money on travel, it might not be the first thing you think of when you're looking to make some money. Why let it sit empty, your house, when it could be earning extra income, though? It's the financially smart thing to do. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra dough.
Yeah, that's right. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. All right, we are back. We've got more to get to. We're going to talk about hospital bills. We're going to talk about cars. But first, Joel, we got our ludicrous headline of the week. And like you alluded to before the break, it has to do with budgeting. This one is from Kiplinger. And the headline reads, "The new 60-30-10 budgeting method."
Mm.
It is not good. And it might sound somewhat familiar, right? Because in the past, we've talked about the 50-30-20 budget.
Which we don't mind.
Yeah, this is an iteration on that, but it is far worse because in this method, you allocate 60% of your pay towards necessities, 30% towards wants still, just like the old one, but then only 10% towards saving and debt pay down. And so essentially in my mind, they're almost allocating or allowing for, it's like, oh man, some of the necessities of life are costing more. But what do you define as a necessity? Because for most folks, they're saying, oh, well, housing, that's something that you've definitely got to pay for. But like, man, you've got more control over that than you realize. And if you've been listening,
same with your ride. I mean,
costs
have gone up, but
food, like all of the things that people see as non-negotiables, like, well, you have to spend at least this much. I would push back and say you've got more control over that than you think.
There's an article in the Wall Street Journal about all the people choosing Aldi these days.
Makes me so happy.
Smart people.
I love just hearing random conversations just like throughout my life. And I hear someone mentioning Aldi and it just makes my heart smile. But if you've been listening for any length of time to the podcast here, you know that 15%, not 10%, 15% is the minimum amount that we want you to allocate towards saving and towards debt eradication. But honestly, even more than that would be ideal as you are trying to achieve your different financial goals. And, you know, everyone's got their own different budgeting methods. Some folks are going to prefer apps, or, you know, some folks are going to prefer diving into Excel, getting messy with the spreadsheets. No worries either way as far as the method that you're taking. But if your savings floor is too low, I mean, that's just going to slow your progress to achieve those financial goals. And, you know, this might be a necessary starting point if maybe you're just getting your finances together for the very first time, but it's just not a great long-term budgeting approach, and we just don't like seeing folks under-saving for their futures.
Yeah, the author of this article in Kiplinger was kind of like, yeah, this isn't a bad approach for a whole lot of people, and my take is the opposite. Like, no, if Americans have poor savings habits, and we need the challenge to do better. And the fact is, that's what this show is all about. It's helping you find the ways to save, invest wisely, so that you can increase your savings rate, so that you can develop more and more greater levels of financial security along the way, not having to worry about money as much. And yeah, if you bring that down, that savings rate and the debt payoff rate to 10%, if that's kind of your goal, you're just not going to get where you're trying to go as quickly as we'd like to see you get there, and I'm sure as much as you'd like to get there as well. Matt, let's talk about Facebook for a second. We talked about Facebook Marketplace and how all the kids are hopping on Facebook Marketplace. It's their one and only thing they like about Facebook these days. And I like Facebook Marketplace too. Trying to sell a few things on there right now. Well,
like what?
A swivel chair right now. Yeah, we're trying to get rid of some furniture, maybe in the sunroom, which got a little too crowded.
To downsize a little bit, or not downsize, just to clear out some clutter.
Spring cleaning time, baby.
I like it.
You know. Well, new statistics reveal that a huge chunk of listings are complete scams, which is particularly true in a few product categories. So 34% of listings overall were found to be fraudulent, which is kind of shocking. You're like, holy crap, one in three things listed on Facebook?
Dude, I feel like I have noticed that over, like, back in the day, like 5-6 years ago.
It wasn't that bad.
It really wasn't, but lately it seems a little...
Now there's more ads.
A little scammier.
And more scams. And so Facebook Marketplace is becoming a tougher place to turn. Maybe we're all going to go back to Craigslist at some point. I don't know. But the top fake listings, by the way, you should be aware of this, are for products in the phone category, shoes, clothing, game consoles, and small electronics, which does not surprise me. That makes sense. Like, you're going to get scam phone sellers, or if you're looking for, not like somebody's like old pair of sneakers for like $10, but if you're looking for the cool Nikes that are hard to find, you're going to get scammed more often in those categories than anything else. And so this comes from a legit study where researchers, they reached out to different posters on Facebook, and what they found was that these fraudulent sellers were using tactics that criminals use, like directing you to fake websites, refusing to allow you to view the item in person, and wanting payment up front. So I think if you're talking to someone on Facebook about an item that you're interested in buying after seeing it on Marketplace, those are all red flags you want to be aware of when you're kind of looking around. If you're being directed elsewhere, or they don't want to let you see the item in person, those are all red flags. You're like, listen, I'm done with you. This is totally a scam.
That's right, man. Let's talk about cars, because Consumer Reports, they released their list of the cheapest cars to maintain. And the least expensive is, drumroll please, Tesla.
Boom.
Followed closely by Lincoln and Buick. And first of all, I think it's no surprise that an EV-only car manufacturer wins this one, because I think that's one of the perks of an EV, right? The fact that they require so little maintenance. Basically, like glorified golf carts,
and no belts or hoses or sensors and all that. You
exactly, know? You just got like tires. I mean, truly, like that's it, right? And so, if you buy a Tesla, you can expect to shell out just $580 in maintenance costs in the first 5 years of ownership, which is kind of mind blowing. And then
probably literally just one new set of tires.
And then it's only something like $4,000 in the first decade of ownership overall. And you compare that to buying a new Land Rover. They're, by the way, the worst ones on the list, which is going to cost you nearly $20,000 over a decade to maintain.
Yeah.
Not like this. These aren't car payments or anything else. Like, literally just to maintain that stinking vehicle.
That's just hanging into the shop. And by the way, that also means you're going to be at the mechanic shop a whole lot more often.
Insane.
So it's the money and it's the time. Like, how frustrating.
Yeah. And so we just want to remind folks to think about the overall cost of car ownership, not just the sticker price, but the average repair, and remember the insurance costs as well. And I'm going to go back to the manufacturers mentioned, like Buick and Lincoln. I think Ford was up there as well. But what I want to say is make sure that you aren't being cheap in an attempt to be frugal as well. Because what you also, like, you can't just think about the sticker price of the vehicle. You can't just think about maintenance costs. But, like, think about how long that vehicle is going to last on the road, because not too far down the list, like, literally only a couple $100 more on maintenance costs were manufacturers like Toyota and Honda. And these are vehicles that are going to get you well past that 200,000 mile mark if you so choose to continue to drive that old ride.
Yeah.
Our Honda, I think we're at like 165,000 miles now. And I'm starting to realize, oh man, it's not going to be too long before we hit that 200,000 mile mark.
How much you drive.
Well, yeah, that's true. But we just want folks to, again, keep that in mind. Don't hear some of these other manufacturers and think, well, shoot, that's the kind of car I need to get as well. But what they're not taking into account is what the cost of your next vehicle might be, because that one crapped out on you and you have to buy another vehicle maybe sooner than you would have had you been driving a more dependable Honda or Toyota.
Yeah, well, we talked about some of the great EV lease deals last week for a little bit too, but it's just a reminder that if you want to commit to a certain electric vehicle for 8-10 plus years, the buying a Tesla kind of makes a lot of sense these days in a lot of the country if it works for your lifestyle and if you like the car, because of the low maintenance cost and because they've lowered the prices on many of those models, the Model 3 and the Model X in particular. So it's just crazy to think about how much how many price cuts Tesla has enacted on some of those rides, and it just makes it so much easier for normal folks to buy a new car and then over 10-12 years for it to actually be a reasonable decision. Like, if you buy the right new car and you hold it for a longer period of time, it can actually make financial sense. But all right, let's talk about medical fees, Matt. There are new fees coming to people's hospital bills when they go in for a procedure, and they're being called facility fees. It's kind of like when you go to and you buy a car, think about all the fees that are attached to it, and you're like, wait a second, I thought the price was this, but then these fees mean it's like $4,000 more? Like, I was not expecting this. Well, this sort of sticker shock is also happening to people after they go into the hospital or to a medical facility. And the Wall Street Journal wrote about the pernicious escalation of these charges and how they're plaguing consumers to the tune of hundreds of dollars extra on normally run-of-the-mill medical invoices.
Mm-hmm.
So what should you do? Well, don't pay it lying down. If you get an invoice for a procedure and there's a facility fee listed, challenge it. Reach back out to the place where you had the procedure done and say, excuse me, never heard of this before, wasn't told about this. Can you take this off the bill? And honestly, you probably want to challenge some of the other vague charges on your bill too. There are probably things there that shouldn't be there. And if you need more information on how to do that, check out two episodes that we've released in the past, 687 with Marshall Allen.
He wrote
about never paying the first bill that comes your way. Episode 716 with Dr. Virgie about pushing back against some of these extreme, ridiculous medical costs that we incur. There are all sorts of ways to have that medical debt either completely eradicated or to have the bill shrunk down in a meaningful way. But you don't get it if you don't know, and you don't know how to actually attack it and the questions to ask and the people to talk to.
That's right. Just by asking that question and pushing back, that can reduce how much you're going to have to pay. And part of the reason for these higher fees is the consolidation that's happening within the healthcare industry. Less competition, bigger companies, that's going to mean dumber fees and more frustration for the masses. Basically, like, some of these smaller clinics are getting absorbed into these larger hospital networks and in these systems. And because of that, formerly, this was a clinic that you went to all the time. But now, because it's part of the larger, mm-hmm. just think of whatever the big hospital network is in your area, they can slap that hospital facility fee on there.
It feels like that's happening in droves where we live. Like, we've seen the main two hospital providers, their names, neon logos
to expand.
They're going up all over the place. Private practices being sucked up by them.
Yeah. Well, the same thing's happening in the animal healthcare space as well, as like vet bills. They're climbing due to consolidation. Private equity firms, they've actually been snapping up smaller vet practices, spending tens of billions of dollars over the past few years to do so. It makes them a whole lot of money.
Yeah.
The vet owners are certainly thrilled as the small business owner, but that decreases competition and it increases what you're going to pay the next time you visit your vet under the new ownership. Vet costs are up almost 10% year over year. And so what you can do is shop around and plan ahead as much as possible. We would also recommend for folks to try to self-insure by having more in savings. The human and pet healthcare systems are pretty messed up. And we are all spending more on our pets than ever before as well. We're paying for surgeries. We're paying for treatments that were unthinkable years before. Nothing we're going to say is going to fix this problem, but we want you to do your best within this space, as it's fraught with peril. Yeah. And I think there are just more opportunities for you to be parted with your dollars. And you got to ask those questions. Again, pushing back, it just generally puts you in a better posture of not just paying every single bill that comes your way without, you know, without thinking about it. Like, yeah. We don't want for you to receive a bill and for the default action just to be like, click to pay. Yeah. And certainly we want you to pay your bills, but maybe not without pushing back a little bit.
Yeah, man. I had a friend who was a vet, and he ended up selling his practice because the offer was too good to refuse. I mean, it was crazy the amount of money being thrown his way to buy this practice. And so for him as an individual, I totally get the decision. But then this is, again, happening all across the country. This is impacting people who love their pets and don't want to spend 10% more year over year. They would rather it be like 2% increases or 3% increases in line with regular inflation. But because of the dynamics, it's just, that's not the way it's shaking out. So yep. You have to watch your own back in this space. All right, Matt, last story. What's the impact of working longer on your ability to retire? This is something that gets talked about sometimes. And if you're in your 20s or 30s, you're probably not even thinking about this yet. But working one more year can make a massive difference in your ability to be financially secure for a long period of time. There was an article, again, we actually mentioned one earlier in Kiplinger. This one was in Kiplinger too. It outlined just how big of a difference a year makes. And that's because it moves the needle on so many levels. First, you end up saving more. You got another year to sock away more money, right? Another year of contributions to those retirement accounts. Second, you'll need to save less for retirement. One less year to fund. So you say, you know, instead of retiring at 69, I'm going to retire at 70. Well, that does both, right? It means you don't have to save as much for retirement because it's one more year that you're working. Third, you got more time for your investments to compound, another year for the money to work on your behalf. And then you can delay Social Security a little bit longer as well, netting a bigger check each month. Basically, an extra year of work can dramatically alter your nest egg and your ability to thrive for decades to come. Not saying like, work forever, die at your desk. But it is interesting. It's worth thinking through the trade-offs because it can make a big difference.
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, this is why within the FIRE community, especially, this is often presented as the one more year syndrome. And it causes people to keep working when they have plenty saved up already. They don't necessarily need to continue to work. And that syndrome can continue year after year, right? Where it just keeps folks at their jobs a whole lot longer than they'd planned for.
Yeah, you say one more year, and then the next year, you say it again.
You're like, maybe one more year. It's just, yeah, moving the goalposts. And I think it is worth knowing all the positive benefits of working longer, but it's also possible to be too conservative where you continue to work when you don't necessarily need to in order to gain higher levels of financial security. And I know we're a couple of dudes who are solidly, you know, still within their wealth accumulation phase. So it's easier said than done. I know that. And I'm curious to see when, as we continue to age up, Joel, whether, like, how easy will it be even for us to to not continue to save and invest, but to actually start drawing down on all that we have worked towards. And I think even small little things along the way can help you to do that. Like, I feel like there's a part, we've talked about how Kate and I, we're not saving or we're not investing any money this year at all. And that's in part because we're working on funding of renovation at our home. But even that, it's almost like trying out retirement, because it's not retiring. I'm not drawing funds out of retirement accounts, but it's a step in that direction. And yeah, it's psychologically plays on the same centers. And because we talk about this all the time, I don't think I'll personally have too difficult of a time drawing down on retirement. But yeah, I do think it's going to take maybe a little bit of practice, whether that's going on a sabbatical like we talked about with Jillian a couple weeks ago, or maybe it's just being a little more introspective and figuring out what it is that shapes and defines how it is that you think about, about your money. Maybe it even takes you talking to a financial therapist, who, by the way, we're going to talk to one next Wednesday. So you can look forward to that one as we are thinking about our feelings they apply to money.
So pumped about that conversation. Makes me think that we just recently published, and we'll link to this in the show notes as well, an article about tapping your retirement funds early. And we try to couch it in that article. Like, you might not want to, but there are ways. And we posted something on Instagram recently about that. And the first knee-jerk response from someone was like, don't ever touch your retirement accounts, ever. And I get where they're coming from. And we talk about the detriment of tapping your retirement accounts early too, because there are real things to watch out for and be careful of. But that don't touch them ever sort of mindset, I think that pervades people who are hyper frugal too. And at some point, the whole goal of accumulating wealth is to be able to enjoy it. And so you have to play that both end. You have to kind of find that center. And most people are bent hard one way or the other, and that's hard to do. We're trying to do the same thing in our own lives, and it's, yeah, you don't come by it easily. Matt, you're dipping your toes in right now, which I think is laudable. It's admirable. And for everyone else out there, yeah, know the benefits of working longer, but also know the downsides, the ways in which it could maybe not allow you to achieve other goals that you might have. And wrapping things up, Matt, let's mention quickly the folks who won the newsletter shout out this week. PixPeak, Rastro, Camby, and Hayden. Thank you for referring other people to the How to Money newsletter. We just hit our 2-year newsletter anniversary, and we're going to send you a free pair of How to Money socks. So you can look forward to getting those in the mail. And by the way, if you are not yet subscribed to the How to Money newsletter, we'd love to have you join us. You can subscribe at howtomoney.com/newsletter.
But that's going to be it for today, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.